and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined by my sister, Lace Mason. Say hello, Lacey.
Hello, neighborinos.
It's been a couple months since Lacey and I've done one of these.
Almost four, dude.
Oh, God. Because I flew solo last month, and then I did, we did Cabaret with Julie before that, and then you and me and Sam did Clue before that. So, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. It's so different. Life is so different for everybody.
Yeah. Tell them about your amazing new family members.
Oh, God, you guys. So, first off, I got a bag and I fixed my teeth, and I hope you hoes know it ain't cheap. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to tackle life and everything I want to do at 40. And I went and got two fucking dogs. Two. Not one. Two. At the same time.
And that's just dogs. 6 week old
puppies. Yeah.
Puppies. Baby dogs.
So we had a Rottweiler-ish puppy 10 years ago. And we lost our dog after when she was like almost eight. And we have just been devastated for 3 years. Well, the lady that we got that dog from called and she's like, whoops, dad got a mom pregnant. Do you want puppies? And we're like, fuck yeah, we want puppies. No, she asked me if I wanted a puppy. And I'm like, yeah. And then it turns into, oh, two. And I got this genius idea that, you know, it wasn't going to be like it was with Maggie. So I wanted them to have each other so that mom could get the fuck out the house. So now we have Bart and Lisa, and I'm fucking tired, and my house smells like poop.
What a great summary.
They won't go outside. They love it outside, but, like, we will walk, and we will walk, and we will walk, and we will walk. And then they'll come in. Thanks. Great.
Speaking of babies, we also have a new baby in our family. I mentioned this last week at the end of the other podcast, my last podcast. That Lacey got us a new baby kitten, and he's very cute and very sweet, and he's like the best kitten ever, but it's thrown the whole equilibrium of our house into turmoil because Dottie is not happy, and like she'll get over it. She's had new kittens in the house before and she's gotten over it kind of, but this one is just so rambunctious and friendly and lovey, and I don't think Dottie's used to that because Mango and Bear were very skittish and shy, and they spent most of their childhood in a kennel, whereas Peanut is just like, I rule this fucking house, what up? He's like, I'm gonna lay in everyone's lap and get in everyone's chest and give them kisses, and what are you gonna do about it? Peanut in the corner glaring.
Peanut is a champ, man. He is the shit. He is scared of nothing. My dog tried to eat him like 3 times and he was just like, oh, that was weird, and just, yeah, whatever.
As we speak, I'm in my bedroom with Dottie, and Peanut has waltzed in and tried to climb up on the bed, and Dottie's just is hissing at him like crazy. And he has no sense of, hey, I could get eaten. He's just like, la la. Okay. I'm just waiting for the day she claws his eyes out, and I'm just like, I don't know. I couldn't stop it. Like,
my cats are really playing it up. They're like, listen, we're really tired of being outside. Like, can we exist too? You know, ever since these fucking dogs got here, can we please come in? So they'll come in and everybody tries to be on their best behavior so they can hang together. But it's a lot.
It's a lot. I love it. Randomly, Lacey will just be like, two. I got two. I'm like, yeah, you did.
Y'all, I ain't done nothing in like a month. Like, I was so proud of myself that I was by myself last night. Sam wasn't here, but I still managed to like stop looking at the dogs long enough to go wash my butt. Cause I just refused to do anything that I know that I can't like check in on them every 10 minutes, but I did it.
Very proud of you.
I washed my butt.
So I guess let's get on to the actual podcast. I know people don't care, but they're going to hear about our lives whether they like it or not. I used to be.
I would like to think that's why they listen. What are you talking
about? See, thank you. I agree because I used to be in an online community that was full of awful people, And one of these awful people once made the comment like how they hate when podcasts do that, when they like talk about their personal lives. I'm just like, if you don't care about the host's personal lives at all, why do you listen to the podcast?
Yeah.
You like, if you just want to listen to people talk about a certain subject, watch a TED talk, take a class. I don't know. It's, you know what I mean? A podcast is something different. It's entertainment. It's community. It's interactive. Right, it's interactive.
It's morning. Like, it's like morning news. Like they talk about dumb shit on the morning news too.
Right. It's like morning radio. It's just like, what else are you going to talk about? It's like, oh, well, you know, it's really, really important that we get to Drop Dead Fred. This movie that came out 30 some years ago is important that we talk about it right now, which is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Drop Dead Fred. This has been on my to-do list for a long time, and it was going to be leaving Tubi by the end of the month. And I was like, we need to do it now before it leaves. Do you have it on DVD? Did you find it?
We settled on yes, we do, but I didn't even look for it. I was like, if I can't get it on Tubi, then I'll find it. But if it's on TV, then I'll at least get some commercial breaks to go pee.
Easy peasy. Yeah, that's usually how I go too. I'm just like, I'm sure we have this somewhere, but fuck it. Streaming is the way. So, hi, Peanut.
Peanut!
If you hear meowing and hissing and scratching in the background, well, you know why. So, Drop Dead Fred is what I would consider a cult film from the 90s that Lacey and I grew up with. It was beloved in our household, at least by us. And when I grew up to discover that it was like critically panned and only had like an underground and ironic following, I was genuinely shocked. I thought everyone grew up with this movie and liked this movie, and that's not the case. Like, what are your memories of this film growing up?
I remember, maybe it was just because of the colors or whatever, but I just remember feeling like it was a kid movie.
Yeah.
And like, I'm watching it now, I'm like, this isn't for kids at all.
Not really. It's kind of heavy.
Yeah, but I don't know. I guess it was just, even the language and shit didn't faze me then, because that's kind of what we grew up around. So this was normal to me. But oh, it was another one of these, like, watch it all these years later and you realize how formative it was.
Yeah, like, this can be added to the echelon of movies that we've covered on this podcast of just was constantly on HBO. Mm-hmm. And we watched when it was on.
Who would we be if HBO didn't exist? For real.
We'd be completely different people. And that's sad, but it's true.
We would have been outside and poking frogs with sticks and
the thing is, we did that too. I mean, you ran around with our cousins and grandma and grandpa. I played alone in the woods like a sad, creepy child. But in between those, when it was raining outside, I was like, hey,
right. Right. I remember being, now that I look back on it, like, I've been manic-y, depressive-y since I was a little kid like that. Like, I'm either like, let's go to Amy's, let's tear some shit up. Or I was just like, I'm going to stay at home for 3 weeks and drink frozen Kroger fucking lemonade and watch the TV. We did, too. We drank the shit out of some, like, Kroger tea, Kroger lemonade. Put it in the bottle. We put it in the freezer, like, while Eureka's Castle was on. And then that way, like, by the time Ready or Not came on, it was, like, just that frosty right amount of mwah.
Wow.
I know.
That's wildly specific.
Ask me to do math. Can't. But.
Oh, goodness. So, a little background on the film first before we get into it. So, the story of Drop Dead Fred is credited to Elizabeth Livingston, but the screenplay itself was written by Carlos Davis and Anthony Fingleton, which is a great name. The film was originally offered to Tim Burton to direct, but he turned the film down.
Oh, and it was man.
I know. Oh, I know. It was ultimately directed by Dutch filmmaker 8 de Jong, or 8 de Jong, how I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce it.
Nothing for this podcast. Every time you do a podcast, you should at least send me like the names. Be like, here, Here's the three names that we don't know how to pronounce.
Right. I should be like, Lisa, YouTube these and figure out how to do it. So the lead role of Elizabeth is played by Phoebe Cates, who is so beautiful. And I'm sad that she retired from acting because I love her very much. But the role was originally offered to Winona Ryder. Ryder turned the role down because she was busy filming Mermaids, another film we've talked about on this show. And because she didn't want to be typecast after several other dark comedic roles that she had done recently, like Beetlejuice and Heathers. Other actresses considered for the role of Elizabeth included Molly Ringwald, Julia Roberts, Martha Plimpton, Jennifer Connelly, Leah Thompson, and Uma Thurman.
I fucking love Martha Plimpton, but she's just not cute enough. I hate to say it. At least, at least back then, she wasn't your, like, textbook, like, I don't know, Phoebe fucking Cates, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But I love her. I
mean, that's hard. That's not even, like, that much of a diss on Martha Plimpton. You just compared to Phoebe Cates.
Right.
People just be dogs. Like.
Right.
She's so beautiful. I don't know. It's funny. When I read Jennifer Connelly, I was like, oh, man, that would have been really good. But then I was like, that's just, it's just Labyrinth. It's just, you know, like a beautiful woman and her imaginary friend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, that's why I think so easily my brain was like, oh, Jennifer Connelly would have been good. I was like, well, because she looks a lot like Phoebe Cates and she basically has done this before.
I did that in my brain at first, actually, when we were watching it. Because, like, I even saw her name in the credits. But then when I saw her face, I had a moment where I couldn't tell her and Jennifer Connelly apart. Wait, no, wait. They really don't look that much alike, but I mean, kind of.
No, I do it with the girl from Legend, too. Like, Phoebe Cates, Jennifer Connelly, and the girl from Legend, whose name I forget right now. But the three of them are just kind of mushed around in my brain.
Who the fuck is in Legend?
The same girl from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, well, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't know the movie Legend.
I don't.
Tim Curry as Satan.
That's the only part that I retain. That's that's like the only part I retain. As weird as it sounds, I always watched it with Angie and it was like our bedtime. And I always fell asleep.
Oh, that's fair. It wasn't as formative for you as it was for me.
No, I don't remember watching it when I was young at all.
Oh, I watched it when I was way too young.
That explains it.
Yeah, and now I'm a monster fucker. See? Let's see. The titular role of Drop Dead Fred was offered to Robin Williams, who declined so that he could make the film Hook instead. The role
good call.
The role went to British comedian Rick Mayall. In a darkly ironic piece of trivia, both Williams and Mayall passed away the same summer in 2014.
Yeah. Talk about fuck me up. Do you know why?
What?
He dropped dead fucking working out. Fucking doing his daily run working out. Why? I'm never going to do cardio. It ain't going to do no fucking good. But take you out too.
He had like his health wasn't good there for a while. It wasn't like he was the pinnacle of health and then dropped dead running. He was like not doing well for a while.
That's okay, good, because that's all I recalled. I'm like, well, drop dead Fred, drop dead, and he was just out trying to take care of himself. So what do we learn, children?
The film was shot in early fall of 1990 in Minneapolis with a budget of $6.7 million. Minneapolis, I thought it was a weird choice. I guess because it just is like generic looking enough. I don't think they ever really say where it's supposed to be either, do they?
No, they don't, because I actually tried to pay attention.
Yeah. There were rumors forever that like Prince visited the set, but the director was like, no, he never did. That's urban legend.
Random.
Well, because Prince is famously from Minneapolis.
Gotcha.
He like owns studios there, so they filmed on studios owned by Prince, but like he was never there.
Gotcha.
So let's get into the plot. I didn't take that many notes. I took enough notes to like keep track of what was happening in the story, but pretty simplistic plot when you really get down to it. The movie begins with a flashback of little Elizabeth being read to by her mother. And I forget the name of the little girl who plays Elizabeth, but they originally wanted the little girl from Curly Sue.
I knew it. I knew that's what you were going to say.
A couple other big names auditioned for that part too. People that ended up, like, I think Anna Chomsky, you know who I'm talking about. The My Girl girl.
The girl that Sam moans about in his sleep. Oh, Vedika, Vedika hot, Vedika hot.
She is really hot. She was in she was in Hannibal, the TV show Hannibal. And I was like, God, I love her.
I think that's the only reason we watched Veep.
Oh, yeah. She was on Veep, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I never watched Veep. But she's hot. But God help me, I can't pronounce your last name. Anyway, we see little Elizabeth being read to by her mother, and you can tell immediately that her mother is a fucking pill. Her mom's name is Polly, but in my notes, I never write Polly. I just write mother.
This scene really sets it. Like, it really sets the scene, like, perfectly. Like, the scenario between the two.
Yeah. She's reading her Cinderella, I think. And she's like, and, you know, they lived happily ever after or whatever. And Elizabeth is like, well, what happened after that? And I think mother says something along the lines of, like, well, she was a good girl and did what she was told from then on, and that's why she lived happily ever after. And Elizabeth immediately is like, what a
load of shit.
She's like eight. Or like five, six, seven, eight. I don't know. Walking and talking, whatever age that happens. And then it cuts to the opening credits. And then after the credits, we meet adult Elizabeth. And she's like giving herself a pep talk. She's going to go speak to her husband, Charles, whom she separated from. And we never really get to hear what her whole speech was going to be, because as soon as she goes to deliver it to him, he just manipulates her and cuts her off. And you can tell immediately he's a piece of shit. And she's very mousy. She has really long, mousy hair and wearing very kindergarten.
They do it up. Like, it is, like, purposely designed to look like a doll your grandma brought from, like, QVC. Like, so juvenile and young. It's gross and creepy.
Yeah. And you have to, because Phoebe Cates is so stunning. Like, you have to doll her up. Not doll her up, but dull her down, rather.
Right. Right.
To even believe for a second that someone would leave her. But Charles has left her for this lady named Annabella. And he works at a Jaguar dealership. And he's like giving this woman a test drive in one of the cars. And Elizabeth follows them in her car and is like begging for him to listen to her. And he's like, you know, it'll be fine. We're over. But tries to make it sound like it's like for the best and was somehow both their idea, and just like, oh, it'll be fine, Elizabeth, you know, this is just how it's going to be and everything will be fine.
He's just like the number one gaslighter ever.
Oh, he's the worst. And I forget that guy's name too, but he's always plays a dickhead. I don't think he's ever played a role where he wasn't a creep.
I've been trying to think of what his name was on, oh, shit, he's from Animal House. Like, that's what I always think of him from, and he is that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He ends up fucking, like, the dean's wife and shit. Like, oh, God.
Tim Matheson is his name.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth parks her car and uses a phone booth to call her best friend, Janie. And while she's talking to Janie, who's trying to, like, tell her that it's good riddance, you know, forget Charles, you're better off without him, which she clearly is. Her purse and then her car gets stolen, which then makes Elizabeth late for work at her stenography job. And when she gets there, the judge fires her. So now she has no car, no purse, no husband, no job. so she's like leaving the courthouse and she has her box of stuff, you know, and she's in the lobby and she trips over this dude's briefcase. And the dude happens to be her friend, Mickey, from childhood, Mickey Buns.
Wait, and stop. What is it? What is his last name?
Bunce. B-U-N-C-E. Bunce.
Oh.
Why?
You know why. I'm five. The whole time I'm like, but. His last name's Butts. Because I kept thinking, they kept making, like, reasons to say this guy's last name every time they did. I was like, Butts. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah. And they haven't seen each other, I guess, since they were like 6 years old. I gotta tell you, I don't think I would recognize somebody.
Not if you go from that little girl to Phoebe. No.
Like, there's no way. It'd be one thing if you, like, met and if you were like in the neighborhood or like near your childhood home and you're just like, you know, I think that might be blah blah blah, but like to run into somebody in the city in the courthouse lobby and just be like, oh my god, you're Lizzie, but like, there's no way.
No, he didn't have Facebook to stalk her for like the last 20 years to see what she looked like. No, ain't true, ain't happening.
Yeah. But we get the sense of me that Mickey is very sweet, and immediately you're like, fuck Charles, root for Mickey. He's cute and he's nice, and you know, he clearly is just like, oh, you're the best person ever.
And maybe they just do that to kind of like set in how crazy he is about her and always has been.
Yeah, totally. And there's a little flashback where Mickey references her old imaginary friend, Drop Dead Fred, and how much trouble they would get into together and how wild Elizabeth used to be when she was little. And then we see a flashback of poor Grandma Bunce getting covered, Elizabeth throwing like a whole bucket of yellow paint on her.
Grandma Bunce!
And I read that for that scene, they used yogurt so that they weren't throwing like toxic chemicals on this poor little old lady.
Mm-hmm.
And that lady was like someone's grandma, like literally like one of the writers to grandmas or somebody's grandma. And they said that she said she was finding yogurt in her ears like 3 days later.
I wonder how many takes they did. Hopefully just
probably
one.
Probably just one. Yeah.
You know Grandma Bunce didn't get paid for that shit either. You know she didn't.
Right. It was like, hey grandma, you want to be in a movie? Sure, honey. Cool. We're gonna throw yogurt on you. So then, Elizabeth goes to see her friend Janie, who's played by Carrie Fisher. And I have wrote in my notes that Carrie Fisher's character in this movie is basically the exact same character she plays in, When Harry Met Sally.
I fucking wrote that down. I'm like, I'm pretty sure there was like a 10-year span where she played the same short-haired character in every movie.
She's
like the level-headed friend, like, hey.
Yeah, the supportive friend of the lead who is sleeping with married men. Like, it's the whole thing. She's sleeping with her coworker. I think he might be her boss, actually, who's married.
Yeah, I don't know why I called her level-headed. In neither movie is she level-headed.
I mean,
he's never going to leave her. No one thinks he's ever going to leave her.
You're right. You're right. I know you're right. But they go to Janie and Elizabeth go to Elizabeth and Charles' apartment, and Charles has moved out and is with Annabella. So no one's there. But Elizabeth's mother shows up. And immediately, yeah, like, we've got the sense from the first scene, but, like, it takes just a few lines of dialogue to be like, oh, she's emotionally abusive.
But why is she hot? Do you think she's hot?
I mean, yeah, in a scary beyond all reason sort of way.
Yeah, I must dig that.
So she takes Elizabeth and she brings her home to, like, Elizabeth's childhood home. And there's like, as soon as she comes in, the whole place is like really neat and tidy and like sterile. And the mother makes a reference. I just got the shampoo in the living room, or the carpet shampooed in the living room. Don't walk through there. She has like a little piece of tape up so you can't even walk in there. Like, what's the point of having a living room if you can't, you know, live in it?
Right.
Everyone has different childhood experiences in terms of like neatness and stuff. We weren't that house. We would like clean really well for company, but otherwise it was like live and let live. There was no, oh, you can't put this on that and walk right on this. You can't do. So that concept is so foreign to us.
That I always feel bad for anyone. Like, I had girlfriends that weren't allowed to go to bed unless there were vacuum lines in the carpet. I'm like, are you fucking serious right now?
Crazy.
I know.
So she goes up to her childhood bedroom and she's going through the cabinets and she finds an old Jack in the Box that has been taped up with masking tape. And she sets it down and, she goes to bed and she's like crying herself to sleep. And there's like a quick flashback that shows that she used to do that when she was little too. So it's painting this picture for us that Elizabeth has always been like emotionally abused and emotionally neglected and has been a very sad, troubled person. And she wakes up because the Jack in the Box is cranking on its own and playing music. So she wakes up and she untapes the box. And exploding out of the box comes Drop Dead Fred, her imaginary friend. Did you have an imaginary friend when you were little?
No, I had you.
Well, that doesn't count because I had you, but I still had an imaginary friend.
Not that I recall.
I had a bunch of imaginary friends because I played make-believe all the time, but like my imaginary friend, her name is Wendy. I had her for a few years.
I wonder if those are just unique to children that weren't around other kids.
I guess, because I was home with grandma all the time.
Like when you, this is going to sound really awful to say, and I don't mean it to, but when you asked me that, I thought, no, I had real ones. Like, I was never by myself long enough to have made anybody up. Like, they would have stolen right. them, too. They'd have broke their neck or threw her down the stairs. Or so, no, I don't. But I just wonder if that's not unique to. I'll have to ask Sam, did you have imaginary friends?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had friends once I got. I mean, I always had friends in school or whatever. People I was friendly with. But, like, in terms of summertime, and it wasn't until middle school that I'd like spend time with friends outside of school. So yeah, during summertime or like in kindergarten when you only went to school every other day, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I wonder how universal of an experience that was. That's how McConnellsville was, where
right
in kindergarten we just alternated days.
Did everyone I don't know. Megan's kids do that.
Oh,
maybe or her boy does that, yeah.
Huh. Any crap. So we meet Fred. And Fred is chaos personified. He's loud, bright red hair, bright green suit, British, foul mouthed, just violent, just woof, crazy. He's like Elizabeth's id, right? So he explodes out and he like immediately starts destroying toys and ripping stuff out, ripping stuff apart. And he convinces Elizabeth to go downstairs with him and he goes outside and gets dog shit all over his shoes.
Wait. You passed the most formative part of the movie for me.
What?
I swear to God, I still quote it whenever I hurt myself. When he is sliding down the banister. And I'm guessing that when he used to do it back in the day, there wasn't like a knob at the bottom on the pole, like a ball on the pole.
So he slides down and hits himself in the nuts. And he's like, who put that there? And anytime, especially when I was a kid, I would like stub my toe or just kick something that's always been there. Be like, who put that there?
Oh, God. Oh, there's a lot of stuff in this that we quote a lot that I like had forgotten, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, so informative. So Fred purposely tracks dog poop all over the freshly shampooed carpets. And Elizabeth is like trying to get control of the situation. So she's like, and he picks up an inkwell, like he's going to pour ink all over the carpet. And she convinces him to stop. She's like, why don't you give me that? And we'll play hide and seek. And he like fakes out like he's going to hand it to her, but then he throws it in the air and she dive bombs and catches it. He's like, good catch. Count to a million. I'm going to go hide.
Snot face.
So he takes off and she's like, what am I doing? She can tell she's like cracked up a little bit. So she goes back to bed and she gets up the next morning and finds her mom is like scrubbing the carpet clean. If I was Elizabeth and this had happened, I would have staged a break-in.
No shit. Would you not have been like, I don't know who the hell did this?
Yeah, because immediately her mom is just like, what is wrong with you? It was like her mom just assumed she did it. I would.
And if that's the case, would you not have made her fucking clean it up?
Right. Because then she can't play the victim.
The martyr, yeah.
Yeah, she has to have the, oh, look what you've made me have to do type thing.
Yeah.
Or even worse, she wouldn't have done it right. You know, she has to do it herself because she wouldn't have done
it. That's exactly right. You can tell she's like the cleanest OCD freak ever.
Right. And people like that shouldn't have children. That's right, I said it.
I'm talking to you, Greg Mason. Oh, what?
What? What?
Speaking of, I asked, I said, you'll got to forgive me. My teeth are just huge at this point. I said, did you have imaginary friends? He said, no. My G.I. Joes and He-Man were my friends.
Aww.
I'm not sure that's any different.
Not really. Oh, that's sad.
I know.
So. It's funny because Elizabeth like tries to bring up Drop Dead Fred to her mom, and she doesn't say his name, but she's like, do you remember my imaginary friend? And her mom like shuts the conversation down immediately, does not want to talk about it. So she's like, nope, I don't remember Drop Dead Fred at all. She's like, nope, didn't say his name before. So but Fred reappears. They're like in the kitchen. Tell us a little bit about this scene, Lucy, because it just makes me giggle and I can't.
Okay, well, where do we start? One of the first things that happens, I think, is he gets his head caught in the refrigerator. Mom shuts his head in the refrigerator, and instead of opening it up, he just, like, pulls and pulls and pulls until his head comes out flat like a pancake, completely like a cartoon. So he, like, rolls around on the floor, trying to reinflate his head and push it back into the normal shape. And when he's on the floor, he realizes he's up underneath Mom. So he, like, scoots up under. And what cracks me up is, like, I understand throughout the movie, like, when he is doing destructive things. Like, why you have to put a kibosh on that. But why you react to the things he does when nobody else can see him.
I know.
I'm not quite sure. But he, like, climbs up between Mom's legs. He's like, oh! He's like, cobwebs! And even as a, like, 7-year-old child, this fucking sent me.
Me too. Oh, God. That's probably my favorite line. Cobwebs. she, like, her mom comes walking over, and she's, like, trying to tell him to go away. And she's like, piss off. And her mother's like, excuse me? And she's like, I said piss off, but I didn't say it to you. Like, so her mom's like, oh, okay. And they sit down to have coffee, and she's just trying to ignore. He, like, goes out to... Oh, no, I remember what happens. She mentions how, of course, you couldn't make your marriage work, right? Which is a shitty thing to say.
No shit.
And Fred's like, you got married? And does he start talking about, does she do it like the pigeons?
Yeah, like right in her ear, right in her face while her mom's talking to her.
And then he goes out into the like the backyard and starts attacking pigeons.
And again, let's just make situations worse when clearly like you're sitting there with your mother. So whatever's going on outside is not your problem. Right. Nor can you be accused of doing anything.
Right. Just let him terrorize the pigeons. Just let, like, just ignore it, Liz. But she goes out there. He like bonks her in the head. He's very violent. He like bonks her in the head with a shovel. And I don't know why that stuff always makes me laugh, because I'm such a sucker for physical comedy. And it's just so funny to see like this beautiful, pristine, like Phoebe Cates getting like kicked in the shin and whopped on the head with a shovel.
But she's just so submissive to it. Like she just accepts it. Like it's her bully. She's just like, oh.
Yeah, like I would take the fucking shovel back and hit him back.
Yeah, no shit.
But she's still so repressed. Like, even though Fred is back, like, that's the key, right? Like, Fred's there, and she's seeing him and reacting to all the stuff he's doing. But there's no ownership of it, right?
Right.
Because we, as an audience, and we, as especially now as adults, are just like, well, this is all in her head. This is all her imagination, her id, her what she wants to do and say and react. But she hasn't reached that point yet where she realizes that.
Right.
So she does kind of get, she gets bullied by everybody, even her own imaginary friend. But they argue, Fred and Elizabeth argue, and he goes out front and he's like, well, if you don't want me around anymore, I'm just going to throw myself in front of the fire truck. And he like stands in the middle of the road, and a truck comes and meow and takes him out. It disappears. All that's left on the ground are her shoes. So Lizzie has a flashback of one night when she was little, where they played burglars, and how they like destroyed the house, and she tried to, and the parents call the cops, right? Because they hear what they think are burglars. Here's one little thing about that scene that I don't understand. The dad's upstairs on the bedroom phone trying to call the cops. They cut the phone line to a phone downstairs. They had, like, unplugged the phone. And then his phone doesn't work anymore.
Because back in the day, it was all wired to that one main phone.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I guess I didn't think about that. I always thought that was weird. I'm just like, what? Just because that phone doesn't work doesn't mean that phone would work.
Right. Because it was like it was like a splitter situation back in the day.
Ah, gotcha. So her dad, Nigel, who is no longer in the picture, obviously. We see him in the flashbacks, but he's not around in present day. Nigel, like, tried to call the cops, but got cut off. So he didn't really get to communicate what was going on. But I guess the cops was able to trace their number enough to or get their address, so they show up. And fucking Lizzie and Fred have destroyed, they've broken a window, they've stolen every like piece of silver in the house. They went out front and tried to like bury it, like bury treasure in the mud. And when the cops show up, Fred is like, I'll take the fall. Tell the cops, drop dead, Fred did it, you know. You don't let yourself get in trouble. Don't let anyone else get in trouble. Tell them I did it. And she tries, and no one listens to her. They just walk right past her, right? And they go inside, and the cops think that Nigel and Lizzie's mother are the burglars. They think that the cops are the burglars, and they end up, like, Nigel tackles the cop down the stairs. And it's actually a pretty impressive pratfall, because there's these two grown men, like, wrestling together, and they go down an entire flight of stairs. And
right, which they deserve, because just fucking announce yourself. Yo, I'm the popo.
Right, I'm the police, or like, hey, we're up here, please help us. But they end up arresting Nigel. And so Lizzie and Fred are up in a tree hiding, right? And like Fred ends up giving Elizabeth like this pep talk where she's like, you know, my mom's right. I can't do anything right. And he's like, don't listen to her when she says stuff like that. That's not true. You know, you're awesome. She sucks. Don't listen to her. And of course, Elizabeth, present day Elizabeth, is having this flashback and remembering all the good things that Fred did for her and how what he meant to her when she was little. And she's like, oh, God, you know, then she feels guilty that he threw himself in front of a truck because she thinks now he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So mother like scoops her up and is like, we're going to go. I'm going to help you get Charles back. So they go shopping, and her mother, basically gives her a makeover to turn her into her. She gets her same haircut, buys her same outfits, just turns her into a mini version of her mother. It's creepy.
I also don't hate the outfit.
I don't either. It's better. I mean, it's better than what Elizabeth was wearing.
That's what my God, especially in the scene where he gets hit by the truck. She is like up to her nose in flannel. And then she's got like these thick, like 7 pairs of socks on at the same time up to her knees. It's like, Jesus Christ.
The most epic bangs to have ever banged. Just like,
whew. Oh, I know.
Crazy. But they get back from shopping and now Elizabeth like looks like her mother. And they find a note in the foyer and from Charles that's like, you know, I miss our mornings together. I miss you. I want you back, blah, blah, blah. And so Elizabeth is like, oh shit, I'm going to go back home. Charles wrote this note. He wants to meet with me. So she scrambles to go back to their apartment. She goes back to the apartment and there's no Charles. There's just Fred because Fred wrote the note. So she's really sad and disappointed and she's like crying and he's like, I don't understand, because Fred doesn't understand romance or any of that. So he's just like, why? Like, what's the big deal? And she tries to explain it to him. And he's like listening intently, but then he's just like, that's the grossest shit I've ever heard in my life. He's like fake throwing up and just like doesn't appreciate romance, right? Well, he sees this big poster. And Elizabeth's like, well, that's the poster for this party that he's throwing, this wine tasting party. And Fred's like, oh, we should go. And Elizabeth's like, she's like, I can't go alone. He's like, I'll be your date, which isn't helpful because no one can see him. So that night, Elizabeth sneaks out. It's like 2 a.m., right? And Fred is sleeping, hanging from the ceiling like a bat, which is always felt very weird.
Very weird.
But she sneaks past the sleeping Fred and she goes to Janie's house in the middle of it. And Janie's there with her boyfriend, her married boss, right? And Janie lives on a houseboat. And she's like, I can't go back to the apartment because Fred is there. Please let me stay. She's like, you can't stay. I have, what's his name here? But she convinces her to let her crash on the couch. And she wakes up and her hair had been like at the beginning was very long, almost like down to her butt almost. And when she went out with her mom, she had got it cut to like a little past her shoulders. She wakes up and Fred has cut half of her hair off into like a bob. And she wakes up to Janie and Janie's boyfriend standing over her and she's like, are you shedding? What's happening? She's like, no, Fred did this. And
why does it look good?
He did a great job. So half her hair, is like all out of balance, right? And Janie and her boyfriend / boss leave. And Elizabeth is just chilling on the houseboat and she sees someone on a speedboat go by that she thinks is Charles. So she steers Janie's houseboat into open water and chases him. And Fred appears. He's like, pirates!
The coolest pirate outfit, by the way. I love
that. Yeah, he's wearing this great green pirate outfit. He's all excited. He's like, yeah, let's play pirates. And Janie's just like, okay, or not Janie, Elizabeth is like, great, we can play pirates. Just don't touch anything. And he's like, okay, I won't touch anything. I won't. Okay, just one thing. And he like just hits a random button. Which, for all intents and purposes, apparently was just a self-destruct button.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
But. I'm not sure. They never explained exactly what it did or what happened, but Fred managed to destroy everything. They never catch who they thought was Charles, who probably wasn't even Charles to begin with. She's just crazy. And Janie's entire houseboat sinks. Miraculously, though, Elizabeth made it off fine. So Elizabeth goes to Janie's work to tell her about what happened. And Janie takes it surprisingly well, considering it's her house. Like,
yeah,
this is the equivalent of, it's not like, oh, I sank your boat. This is equivalent of being like, oh, I burnt your entire house down. Like, everything you own is gone. She's very calm considering.
It's all still there. It's just underwater.
Yeah. This next scene gives me such secondhand embarrassment, I can hardly stand it.
I know. I didn't realize that was a thing for anybody but me until you said something like that the other day. Like, oh, Lord.
Oh, God. It's called the Mots. If someone gives you the Mots.
Oh, okay.
So the scene Janie gives me the Mots. So I don't know. I remember being little and thinking, wow, Janie's really silly. But as an adult, I'm just like, I don't know if Janie's doing this for Elizabeth's sake or if she's doing it as this is the way her anger at the situation manifests itself.
Yeah, it's better than beating the shit out of the crazy girl is exactly right. What this is.
Right. She doesn't take her anger out on Elizabeth. I think she thinks, oh, this is my best friend who has lost her mind. And she's like, well, Fred is in your office. He's in this meeting. He's sitting in your empty chair. He's right in there. So Janie's like, oh, okay. So she goes in there, wheels the chair out. And in this great bit of physical comedy, like, we can see Fred. No one else can but Elizabeth. Fred gets out of the chair. Janie thinks he's still in the chair. And Janie proceeds to try to beat the shit out of him. So she's just punching air while... while Elizabeth and Fred stand there just like watching her, and she's yelling and screaming and venting and punching the air, and everyone in the meeting comes out to see what the fuss is, and she lets it slip that she's like sleeping with the boss. So that's not good. I don't know if they ever say, is it implied that she loses her job or does she, I don't know what happens.
They don't say. There are so many things that happen to, like, these people that they never read this.
Elizabeth goes to lunch with Mickey. And they, like, go to a restaurant, which I guess is in, like, a really big fancy mall, is what I gathered. Before that, she picks out a dress to wear to that wine tasting party. And then she meets with Mickey. And the entire time she's at this restaurant, Fred is fucking with her. He's, like, making her hands do sort of stupid shit and knocking shit off the table and throwing her plate of food, and Mickey's just like very patient.
That's how hot she is.
Yeah. exactly. He's like, well, what, why'd you do that? And she's like, I'm crazy. And he's like, oh, okay, I want to be crazy too. He's envious of her, what he perceives as her joie de vivre or whatever. In reality, she's just losing her fucking mind. And so he starts throwing stuff and they get kicked out of the restaurant. And so they're out in the the main part of the mall, Fred and Liz are. And Mickey sneaks back into the restaurant to get her dress. And they're chasing after Mickey. And Fred and Elizabeth are arguing. And she's trying to ignore him. And she, there's like a string quartet playing at the middle of this fancy mall. And Fred, like Lacey said earlier, this would have been a perfect time to just ignore what was going on. Fred takes place of one of the violinists. So he's like playing poorly in this quartet. And Liz could have just ignored it, but instead she like goes up to him and like tells him to knock it off, and he doesn't listen. So then she starts to beat him with her purse. And then Fred turns back into the actual poor violinist who is standing there. So Liz is just in the middle of this mall beating this poor woman with her purse, shatters her violin. And so it cuts to the next scene of her mother's there, like bailing her out from security and writing this violinist a check to replace her violin. So now she's stuck back with her mom, right? And just a little sidebar in this scene, Elizabeth has her purse back. It's the same purse from the first scene. It was like, that got stolen.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. So she replaced it with the exact same purse, I guess. So her mother takes her to a psychiatrist who specializes in imaginary friends. So everyone else is in the office, her little kids and their mothers. And there's this cute little scene where Fred meets up with all these other kids' imaginary friends. Like, they all know each other, right? And they're all in this lobby together, and they're playing and horsing around.
I mean, we're led to believe that there's, like, a whole nother universe. Like, he talks about it in the beginning, like, I can't go home because of you. So, I assume they all must live in this alternate land.
Right. Which is funny, sidebar, they did a episode of Supernatural based on Drop Dead Fred.
What?
Where, like, yeah, where we meet Sam's imaginary friend from when he was the kid. And it's really funny that actually, because Dean is kind of like, because Sam was like me. He was like backward and nerdy and kind of shy. And Dean was Dean. And Dean's just like, what do you need an imaginary friend for? You had me. And he was like, oh yeah, yeah, that was great. You were like completely different. That's really funny now that I think about it. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing in that episode too, where there's like a whole universe of imaginary friends that we see. And which could have made fodder for a bunch of other movies, but we'll get into that later.
Or a series, like a Saturday morning series.
Yeah, totally. Or kind of like how there is one, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that show.
I do too.
So Elizabeth gets prescribed these pills that will apparently make Fred go away. And the other imaginary friends warn him. They're like, don't let her take the green pills. Like, what's his name? Kid took them and he died, right? So Fred's been warned. But the mother hires this really scary nurse to help monitor Elizabeth. And Elizabeth has kind of like given up. She's kind of catatonic. She's kind of sitting in her bed trying to ignore him. And he's trying to get her to snap out of it. And we get this flashback to when Elizabeth's mother trapped Fred in the Jack in the Box. And taped it shut and put it away. And she said, if you ever open this, I'll throw it away. And you know what happens to the garbage. Fred will get killed. So basically traumatizes this little girl into thinking that her imaginary friend is gone forever or will be killed if she brings him back. And this was actually based on an incident that happened to the screenwriter's friend when their mother flushed his imaginary friend down the toilet when he was little, and it traumatized him.
That's the saddest thing I've heard. Can you imagine how far you'd have to be pushed to be such a dickhead?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, I try to have empathy for the parents, too. Like, in a way, I get it, but Jesus. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's just, it's her own doing and in the long run, because we see all the horrible stuff that like Fred and Elizabeth do. But the reason that Elizabeth acts out the way she does is because the mom is so terrible.
Right.
It's just this horrible secular thing. So she acts out more, which makes the mother worse. And it's just this horrible thing.
Where's fucking Super Nanny when you need her, man?
Right. So after Fred and her talk about like this flashback and how she, what had happened leading up to him disappearing, Elizabeth realizes that Fred represents her spirit and her joy, and that she let her mother take that from her, for, not just as a child, but for the rest of her life. And it's why she was so mousy and let herself be manipulated and just, you know, so she agrees to go with Fred to Charles' wine tasting party. But her mother and the nurse won't let her go, so she sneaks out the window, and Mickey is there because he wanted to bring her her dress. And the mother wouldn't let her, Mickey, see her, but he waited outside for her. And when she breaks out through the window, he's like, hey, you know, I'll take you. So he drives her, and she like gets ready in his car. And there's that great part where Fred is sitting between them, and they're just like being sweet and cute and flirting or whatever. And Fred's just like, oh, I'm in a truck with two girls. Just a girl. So they go to the party, and Elizabeth looks amazing. She's in this great, like, plum, dark purple dress, and her hair is done really nice, and she looks amazing. Very not like her, right? And Fred is in, like, a green tux with tails, and his hair is swirled up kind of like a Jimmy Neutron type do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So he's being Fred, and she's trying her best to ignore him, but, you know, as well as she obviously doesn't have any control over that. And he's sliding around on the floor looking for Charles, and he slides underneath this woman's skirt, like he did with the mom earlier. And he's like, no panties, no panties. His eyes bug out of his head, and he's just like, you know, enraptured, looking up at this girl's skirt. So Elizabeth goes over to try to get him to stop, and the woman notices her, so she like plays it off. She starts talking to this beautiful blonde woman, and then Charles comes over and kisses the woman, and we realize she's Annabella.
Do you realize who that was, by the way?
Who, the woman?
Remember when we had a conversation a few weeks ago, and I confused the fuck out of me like I usually do, because I called her Bridget Foster, and you were like, what? Oh, you were like, do you mean Fonda? I'm like, oh yeah.
was that her?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'll be damned.
She is so hot. Oh.
She's very hot. But Fred, being Fred, like, makes Elizabeth hug Charles. And Charles is so taken aback by how amazing she looks. But she's Elizabeth is embarrassed by Fred, so she leaves the party and goes back to her and Charles's apartment. But Charles follows her home, and she has changed. She's like in her robe. She's like no longer all dolled up, but he's just like, you look so beautiful and I want you back, and blah, blah. So they start fooling around, and they go back to the bedroom, and they hear something out in the living room, and she's like, oh, it's Fred. And Charles assumes it's someone that she's been seeing. So he's like, Fred, this is Charles, her husband. I'm home now. You know, you need to leave. But they still keep hearing noises. So Charles goes out and gets a frying pan and bashes who he thinks is Fred over the head, and it's the nurse. He knocked out the nurse. And, but once they, like, realize what was going on, you know, Charles is like, you know, I'm here now. You know, you guys can leave. I'll take care of her. And her mother makes sure to give Charles her medication, right? The green pills. So Charles makes Liz take the pills that make Fred go away. And so there's like a little bit of a montage where we see she's taking the medicine and it's making Fred get weaker and weaker. And then we get a cut scene where she's talking to Janie. Janie's like, you know, jogging, speed walking, doing whatever. And she's chasing after her, talking to her.
And she hands her smoking a cigarette.
While smoking a cigarette, yeah. Very late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She hands her a check, and she's like, have you ever seen so many zeros in your entire life? She got a huge insurance payout for her houseboat. It was apparently worth a lot more than she realized. Mm-hmm. So that turned out okay for Janie, so that's good. So Janie's tickled. And so Liz keeps taking her pills, and Fred keeps getting weaker. And then...
Yeah, she's like, oh, I'm phasing Fred out. And she's like, oh, why?
Yeah. She's like, yeah, it turned out good for me. But apparently, like, Fred still has enough powers to fuck with her because she makes her and Charles dinner, and it's a mud pie. She takes off the lid of this dish, and it's mud pie that squirts all over Charles.
I like how they do Fred visually, too, because the weaker he gets, the more it just looks like he's been faded in the sun. And yeah, his clothes just get like,
yeah. Which I'd never noticed until this viewing.
Me either.
So Fred is like on the floor, like he's really weak, and she just keeps, you know, taking her medicine. And she's like, I'm sorry about the mud pie. I'll make us this great dinner salad and everything will be fine. So she's making the salad, and there's like a running gag that when she's around certain flowers or if she's around anything that makes her sneeze, anytime she sneezes, Fred like bounces off the walls like a bouncy ball. And she's grinding up pepper into the salad and makes her sneeze. And he bounces up and down. And they have the type of apartment where the walls don't meet the ceiling, like, which is funny because you'd think they'd be able to hear everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So Charles is in the other room on the phone. And when Fred bounces around from her sneeze, he lands on top of the wall and he can see into the bedroom and see that he's on the phone with Annabella. And so he's like, please, you know, just listen, just come in here, listen to what he's saying. So Elizabeth opens the door and listens to this conversation he's had with Annabella, which is basically just like, I'm in control of the situation. You know, I can still see you. You know, I have her completely under my control. Just talking shit about Liz. So Elizabeth is so upset that she collapses, and she kind of collapses into Fred, and they kind of become one, and they go into this dreamscape. And it's like this dream nightmare version of her childhood home. And the first thing they come upon is Charles in his Jaguar in the living room. And like I said, it's like a nightmare. It's they do it really well because it kind of feels like how a nightmare does, where nothing really makes sense. Like, why would he be in a car inside the living room? But it's all symbolism. It's all weird and creepy.
Right.
So they come upon Charles. And she pops the hood ornament off of his Jaguar, and it makes him in the car deflate like a balloon, and he disappears. So she's overcome Charles, right? And now she has to go up to her bedroom, but the steps are like a matte painting, and you can't go up them. So he's like, imagine a tree, you know, grow a tree. So she pictures a tree growing up from the stairwell, and they climb the tree and go up to the bedroom. And before she can reach her bedroom, she's stopped by her mother. And I forget how she defeats her mother. What does she say? Oh, she says, I'm not afraid of you anymore.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So she, you know, tells her this image of her mom. She's like, I'm not afraid of you anymore. And it makes the mother disappear. So then she goes into her childhood bedroom and she meets her child self. And she's taped to the bed. And Elizabeth takes all the tape off and like frees her inner child, right? And her inner child become one, and they hug, and she takes her inner child back into herself. And then she's like, okay, you know, we've done it. We've done what I needed to do. Let's go back to the real world. And he's like, I can't go back with you. Like, you doing all this, you overcoming all this means you don't need me anymore. And So he just says, you know, kiss me and say goodbye, and this will, you'll never see me again. And I texted Lacey while I was watching this last night. I was like, why is this making me cry? This whole scene made me so teary-eyed. And so they kiss and hug, and then she wakes up back in her apartment. And she goes back to making the salad, and then she picks it up. She goes in the other room right after Annabella, like, dumps Charles' ass. So now he's doubly screwed. She goes in there and she dumps the salad on his head. She picks a booger, wipes it on his face, and says, goodbye, Charles, and takes his Jaguar and leaves. And she goes back to her house. And does she go to get something in particular, or does she, like, just go to tell her mom off?
I think she goes to get the box, doesn't she?
Yeah, she gets the Jack in the Box. And she goes, and her mom's yelling at her and telling her to stop and trying to tell her what to do. And she says the most fucked up thing. Do you remember what she says to her?
Mm-mm.
She says, you know, it serves me right. I shouldn't have had a child to save a marriage.
Yikes.
And Elizabeth is like, that is an incredibly fucked up thing to say. Why would you say that? But she's just like, you know, goodbye, mother. And her mom's just like, I don't want to be alone. I'll be lonely. So she turns around, she goes back in, she gives her mom a hug, and she says, you should try making a friend. And then leaves. So now she's She's told Charles off. She's told her mother off. She has come into her own. She's become her own person. And she's accepted her id, which was Fred, right? So we get this little denouement scene at the end where she's hanging out with Mickey. And through the movie, which I didn't mention earlier, but Mickey has gone through a divorce, and he has a little girl named Natalie. And she's, like, outside talking to Mickey, and Natalie comes out covered in chocolate syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you know, I forget what they say, but basically she's been terrorizing the babysitter. And she's like, I didn't do it. It was Fred. And Elizabeth's like, I believe you. And tell, you know, give Fred my love. And no one can see but the audience and Natalie that now drop dead Fred is Natalie's imaginary friend. And then, like, terrorize the baby. The babysitter tries to quit. And they, like, string her up like a goddamn, like, string her up by her ankle. And she's hanging upside down from this tree. Like, they're just terrorizing her. And you see drop dead Fred and Natalie hook pinkies. And the movie ends with Elizabeth watching Natalie with Fred. And that's the end.
I always liked that because I felt like, you know, I feel like they're going to be a couple. Like, there's no question about that in the end. So, like, now this little girl actually has a grown-up that's not going to fucking lose her shit over what is happening because she understands.
And I guess, I forget what the original ending was, but I guess this was done in reshoots, which you can kind of tell because Rick's, the guy that plays Fred's hair, is kind of different. You can tell it's a wig.
Uh-huh.
Because whatever the original ending was, like, too depressing, and the test audience didn't like the implication that Fred was gone. They reshot this to show that Fred was still around.
Yeah.
Trying not to fall off my bed. So, as I mentioned earlier, the film had a budget of $6.7 million, and it earned at the box office $14.8 million, which I guess isn't great, but it is more than double what they put into it, so it's not
bad. Yeah.
The film was critically panned, with Gene Siskel going so far as to saying, quote, this is easily one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
No.
Yeah. There were a lot of reviews along those lines of, like, this is the worst movie ever. Despite the critical response, the film apparently made enough money to motivate the filmmakers into wanting to make a sequel. When first presented with the idea, Rick Mayall declined the offer, and Then newcomer Jim Carrey was considered as a replacement. But Carrey's success soon took off and the film never happened. Male reconsidered revisiting the role in the 2000s, but because of his rapidly declining health, nothing came of the idea. Then a remake starring Russell Brand was in the works, but when Brand's remake of Arthur was a huge flop, the idea was scrapped yet again. So they've gone back to the well.
That nobody likes, like, I quote Arthur all the time.
I've never seen it.
You have to watch it. Like, even, yeah, you can feel how you feel about Russell Brand. I think people either love him or hate him, but I think you should watch it at least once.
I'm neutral. I like him in stuff. I like to get him to the Greek and Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I just don't think I want to hear half of his opinions.
Yeah. He would have been, would have been a good idea. Like, he would have been a good replacement.
I think so too. Or that one dude, that Nigel guy. Fuck. I think that's his name. The guy from the British Bake Off.
Oh, that's annoying. Noel Fielding. It's Noel Fielding.
No.
You're close. Yeah. People listening are probably screaming at their fucking Noel Fielding, you dumb bitches.
No, okay, but there's this great scene, and it will not translate when I say it, but you just have to see it. Like, Russell Brand is sitting in the bathtub, and he's talking to his, like, nanny. And he's there. She's trying to have, like, a serious conversation with him, and he's sitting in the bathtub looking out the window in binoculars. And he's like, look! I don't remember her. I think her name's Hobbs or something. He's like, look! It's Asian you! And the woman, like, is an identical version, just a different... And he just, like, keeps looking out the window and, like, finding people that look like people that he knows, kind of like I do. But I do that all the time. I'm like, it's Asian you!
Oh, God. Yeah, I need to rewatch the original Arthur, too, first. Like, I haven't seen that in a bajillion years.
I don't know if I've ever sat all the way through the original one.
So here's a question. Is Rick Mayall cute?
I say he looks good in green.
I don't know. He has a googly eye, which is...
Oh, I know. Mother ruined me. Googly eye.
But I've always kind of thought he was cute ever since
I would need to see him normal, maybe. Yeah. To judge, but
yeah, go like YouTube some, because he's, you know, very famous in the UK. He's been on a bunch of TV shows and stuff. You should watch him as not Fred.
Yeah
But at the scene, I just remember being little at the scene at the end when him and Elizabeth kiss. I was just like, oh. I think it's cute.
See, that's the only, when we were talking about this earlier, the only imaginary friend I remember having, and this says so fucking much about me that it's scary. I dated imaginary, like, Slater for, like, a year. We were married. Like, Amy and I played the same game every day, and I woke up resenting my husband just the way that my mother resented my father every day. But he was real, and it was Mario Lopez, totally.
We all did stuff like that. Here's my thing. If they were to make a remake of this, I would want it to be done in a way that more accurately... This is so stupid because it's supposed to be a comedy and it's supposed to be a fantasy. But I would like to see the same story told, where it more accurately and realistically portrayed, like, anxiety and depression and dissociation.
Yeah.
Where stuff didn't happen that couldn't be explained by Elizabeth actually having done it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be a letter left by Fred from Charles because Elizabeth couldn't have done that.
Right.
Or, like... stuff being moved or thrown without Elizabeth doing it, because she couldn't have done it. Like, I would want it to be more grounded. That sounds so dumb because that's not the point of the movie, but like, I think it could make a really interesting story if it had been more grounded in reality.
I kind of always thought that too. Like, the whole note writing thing really throws it. Yeah. Of all the things in the movie, that really does throw it.
Right. I don't know. That's just the adult in me. Young Hillary didn't give a shit, but as an adult, I'm just like, yeah, man, this could have been a really interesting examination into how people dissociate, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love this movie.
I just watched the same Gilmore Girls 7,000 times. That's how I dissociate. or if you hear like the Office theme, dun, 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 you're like, oh shit, she's going through something.
I hate that so many people hate this movie. I like it. it's silly and gross sometimes, but it's harmless, I think. No worse than a lot of other movies of the 90s.
No shit. There's a lot of stinkers.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very much if you like Beetlejuice or, I don't know, what else would you compare this to?
Fucking nothing. Honestly. But when you said something about Tim Burton, it felt like a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, totally.
Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, like if you like kind of like the whimsy gothic type movies, you'd dig this. Any final thoughts on Drop Dead Fred?
You've only got a couple days. Go watch it on Tubi right now. Yeah. Right now.
Before the end of June, watch it for free on Tubi. And then it succumbs to the curse of the podcast where it disappears.
Yep.
No, you can rent it. I mean, it's available to rent, but, you know, I'm cheap. So. Yeah, that about wraps that up. Thank you, Lacey, for joining me, and welcome back to the podcast after a couple months.
No, I didn't hear a peep. I figured I'd hear the dogs. Oh, what are you doing?
I'm excited to get out there because the baby's here. Yay, the baby.
Kiss him for me.
I will. Thank you all for listening. You can support the podcast in a couple different ways. One, you can go to our support page and make a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly patronage. That helps me keep the lights on. Or you can help the podcast by sharing the link with your friends and followers to help grow our audience and get us more listeners. As for the people that come back every month, we appreciate you greatly. You are the best. Thank you for listening to us ramble like idiots for an hour and a half.
Word.
Yeah. And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.